This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
No one wants to think about going to their final reward, but when that day happens, your earthly worries will be over. But not for your family if you don't have a legal will. Yet millions of Americans don't.
It's something that people put off, but it really is something that you can do for your heirs in advance that will save them a lot of headache, potentially, when you're gone.
Then, a former homeless drug addict with a criminal record shares what it took for him to recover.
We need to change policy to incentivize them to seek or sometimes be mandated to detox centers. And then after that, we need long-term treatment that includes job training so that they actually have a way to be self-sufficient.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's InfoTrack. The show gets underway right after this.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
My car really needs a wash.
The $20 Meguiar's bundle includes Gold Class Car Wash for a showroom shine.
Get in the zone.
And what about my tires?
Just spray the included Hot Shine tire coating and you're all set.
Get in the zone.
The inside is not great.
No problem. The quick interior detailer in the bundle can help with that too.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
This radio commercial was made to convince you to stop speeding. We can't use siren sound effects on the radio, so we'll use other equally jarring sound effects to get your attention. Like telling you that whether you drive a little over the speed limit or a lot, you can crash just the same. You could hurt yourself or worse, others.
I'm at the scene of the collision.
And the damage you cause will be beyond repair. See? We didn't have to use crash or siren sounds after all. Speeding catches up with you. Brought to you by NHTSA.
There are a lot of so-called fast food deals out there. But do any of them have the Wendy's Junior Bacon Cheeseburger, Crispy Fries, everyone's favorite nugs, and a drink for just $5 like Wendy's Biggie Bag? Nope. And that's why no other deals can be called the Wendy's Biggie Bag. That and a little thing called plagiarism. When the deal is as fresh as the meal, gotta be Wendy's.
Gotta be fresh.
Includes choice of JBC or crispy chicken sandwich with 4-piece nugs, junior fry, and small soft drink. U.S. price and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Alaska, Hawaii, and California and via third-party delivery.
Last year's RV trip, we met a couple with the same bumper sticker. What are the odds?
Your cousin isn't a good storyteller.
He was a podiatrist, or was it a pharmacist?
Huh, you don't say.
Oh, I can't remember.
But she owns an RV protected by Progressive, and you don't. So until you get your own RV, her stories are the most interesting stories you've ever heard.
Wow, interesting.
And when you do get your own RV, save money by bundling it with your home, auto, or other vehicles with Progressive.
Oh, anesthesiologist. He was an anesthesiologist.
Progressive Casualty
right.
Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Experts say you should have a will, but a surprising number of Americans don't. Gal Wetstein is a senior research economist at the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, and they recently examined ways to incentivize more people to write a will. Gal, your organization commissioned an online survey and experiment that, among other things, looked at what percentage of American adults do not have a legal will. And I understand that answer is significantly different depending on demographics. Tell us the results.
That's exactly right. We know that people have been writing fewer and fewer wills over time. And so when we look at households where the head of the household is over age 70, that's declined. But in particular, like you mentioned, it's hugely different by race and ethnicity. So in our latest data, we see about 75% of whites over age 70 have a will. That drops to about 30% for blacks and Hispanics.
And among younger demographics, it's presumably lower?
Oh, absolutely. Something that increases with age.
The survey asked why someone first had a will established. What are the most common reasons?
The most common reason is when they have a child. The second most common reasons are when someone close to them passes away, or when they get a recommendation from someone close to them to write a will. And then some people, unfortunately, do have the unpleasant experience of dealing with an estate that doesn't have a will. And when that happens, they also do tend to write their own wills.
On the flip side of that coin, aside from the obvious that no one wants to ponder their own demise, what are the biggest reasons people don't have a will?
Well, that particular reason of not wanting to think about one's mortality, it is the main reason why about 5% of people in our survey don't write a will. But by far, the biggest reason is people saying they just haven't gotten around to it yet. They plan to, but it's just never a priority. The second most common reason why people haven't written a will, in our survey at least, is that they believe they don't need to because they have already named beneficiaries on their most important assets, like their 401k, which requires you to name a beneficiary generally.
Tell us why having a will is so important.
I think there are, well, a few reasons why it's still important to write a will, even if you have a named beneficiary on your 401k. First of all, for most middle-class Americans, their largest asset actually isn't their 401k, it's their house. And houses don't usually come with a built-in beneficiary. The complication in particular arises when people die without a will and rely on whatever the default distribution is for an estate in their state where they live or die. And that varies a little bit by state, but mostly what happens is that they divide assets among certain classes of beneficiaries. And in particular, when dealing with a house, it's not easy to divide a house. A bank account, you know, money, you can give half to one child and half to the other child. But when you do that with a house, you end up with very complicated ownership structures that really make it hard to do any number of things that we take for granted when we are the sole owners of our houses. Things like filing an insurance claim for flood damage, for example. Getting a loan against your house through a HELOC or something like that. Things like getting a tax break for being, say, a senior. Seniors often have advantages on property tax payments, and you can't get that necessarily if you aren't the sole owner, or if the title at least isn't completely clear. And so for people whose biggest asset is their house, which is the majority of Americans, they should still write a will if they're worried that that big asset will end up being divided among a number of heirs. The other thing is how difficult it is to get through probate. Almost all the states, except through trusts or things like that, need to go through probate. I'm not a lawyer, so this is not legal advice in any way. But estates generally need to go through probate. The thing is, it's much easier and faster when there is a clear will. And that can matter in a lot of cases as well.
We're talking with Gal Wetstein, a senior research economist at the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. And we're learning about their research into ways to incentivize more people to write a will. Gal, tell us a bit about the ideas to increase will writing and what you found was most effective.
The whole survey and the experiment inside it that you mentioned were motivated by this idea that if your biggest asset is a house, and the house is the biggest complication, one of the biggest complications in dying without a will, then maybe once you're getting a mortgage, that's a good time for us to nudge you into writing a will. There's other reasons why we thought that might be a particular opportune time. One reason is that you're already listing all your assets and thinking about everything you own because you need to tell that to your lender when you're trying to get the loan. And so half the work is already done, we thought. The other thing is that you are already acquiring a large asset that you might have in mind for someone, because people do think about leaving a legacy, especially in the form of a house. And so for all those reasons, we thought when you get a mortgage, that might be a good time. So we have three treatment arms and a control group. For the control group, we just asked them if they intend to write a will. We didn't tell them much else. The first treatment, we asked them to imagine that they were getting a mortgage. A second treatment had the same mortgage scenario, but it also asked them to envision what would happen if the bank that was giving them the loan were willing to incentivize them to write a will by giving them $500 off the closing costs. And then the third treatment, which we thought was just a way of seeing if just interacting with a bank is a good time, was if you were opening a checking account or a savings account, something much less complicated than getting a mortgage, but that still involved some interaction with a financial professional. And so what we found was that actually getting a mortgage is not a good time at all to nudge people into writing a will. And all the responses we got were consistent with, you're already overwhelmed. Getting a mortgage is complicated. You're already signing a bunch of papers. You're buying a house. People were already at their wits' end with all of the bureaucracy and paperwork, and so they didn't want to add on anything more at that time. What was much more effective is at the time of opening a checking account or a savings account, these are much less involved, and that seemed much more effective.
How much does a typical will cost to create?
There certainly are quite inexpensive wills that you can get online, pretty standard things from LegalZoom or other online resources. I will caution, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I have talked to lawyers, and one thing that's come up is that there's a difference between writing a will and writing a good will. If you go to a lawyer or to an AI, for example, and tell them that you want to divide all your assets between your, say, three children, they can do that. That's easy to write up. But it may not be much better than just relying on the state default, which would anyway do something along those lines. You probably want someone to explain to you the consequences of, say, dividing the house between three children and also dividing the bank account between three children and also the 401k, when instead you could, for instance, give one child the house, one child your bank account, one child your 401k, or compensate them with cash between these different sources. So each one could still get the same value, but you wouldn't end up with these complicated ownership structures of a house or a family business, which again has the same kind of issues of complicated ownership if you just divide it between people.
Lots of people listening to this conversation do not have a will. Do you have any final thoughts for them?
I guess I would say that it's classically something that people put off for a variety of reasons, among them not that it's unpleasant, but it really is something that you can do for your heirs in advance that will save them a lot of headache, potentially, when you're gone.
Gal Wetstein, Senior Research Economist at the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Thanks for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Next, recovering from addiction, crime, and homelessness. That story coming up.
Stick around. There's more InfoTrack straight ahead.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? You've got an oil change coming up. You can go farther and save on full synthetic with our oil change special. Right now, you can get 5 quarts of STP full synthetic oil with an STP extended life oil filter for just $29.99. Get the parts you need when you need them at AutoZone or AutoZone.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
This radio commercial was made to convince you to stop speeding. We can't use siren sound effects on the radio, so we'll use other equally jarring sound effects to get your attention. Like telling you that whether you drive a little over the speed limit or a lot, you can crash just the same. You could hurt yourself or worse, others.
I'm at the scene of the collision.
And the damage you cause will be beyond repair. See? We didn't have to use crash or siren sounds after all. Speeding catches up with you. Brought to you by NHTSA.
Ew. Gotta get rid of this old Backstreet Boys t-shirt.
Tell me why!
Because it stinks, boys.
Tell me why!
I've washed it so many times, but the odor won't come out.
Tell me why!
No, you tell me why I can't get rid of this odor.
Have you tried Downy Rinse and Refresh? It doesn't just cover up odors. It helps remove them.
Wow, it worked, guys.
Yeah.
Downy Rinse and Refresh removes more odor in one wash than the leading value detergent in three washes. Find it wherever you buy laundry products.
There are a lot of so-called fast food deals out there. But do any of them have the Wendy's Junior Bacon Cheeseburger, crispy fries, everyone's favorite nugs, and a drink for just $5 like Wendy's Biggie Bag? Nope. And that's why no other deals can be called the Wendy's Biggie Bag. That and a little thing called plagiarism. When the deal is as fresh as the meal, gotta be Wendy's.
Gotta be fresh.
Includes choice of JBC or crispy chicken sandwich with 4-piece nugs, junior fry, and small soft drink. U.S. price and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Alaska, Hawaii, and California and via third-party delivery.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
What's it take to turn your life around when you're a drug-addicted, homeless criminal? InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco has the story. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Jared Klickstein, author of Crooked Smile, What It Took to Escape a Decade of Homelessness, Addiction, and Crime. He documents a shocking life of addiction and brutality he faced at his own hand, with calls for solutions to the growing problems of addiction and homelessness. Jared, your own parents, you say, were addicts, and you were left to make excuses for them and cover for their behavior. Give us an example or two.
My parents were both heroin addicts and crack cocaine addicts, and they started to get arrested around the time that I was in second grade. So social services began coming around the house, and they would sort of train me to explain that my mother made me breakfast every morning and my father made me wear a helmet when I was riding a bike, you know, things like this, to just express that they were completely responsible. They weren't, but, you know, I did love them, and I figured that staying with them would be better than getting put into foster care.
Now, at your lowest, you say you awoke in a bathtub full of water and blood, and later, looking in the mirror, you saw that your lower lip was gone, as was the flesh all the way down to the beginning of your chin. Did you ever find out what happened to you?
Yes, through some detective work by the doctors, it seems that I was in some sort of fight in a blackout and got sliced with a knife. And then after that, I actually did a lot of damage to myself in a blackout. I don't remember any of this, but I was actually like chewing on my lip significantly, and they had to remove some of it at the hospital. And then eventually I got reconstructive surgery, and they did a pretty darn good job.
Now, in calling for solutions to addiction and homelessness, you write, and I quote, "The fact that it's beyond difficult to access detox and treatment for those that need it most, even when they're willing, is the crux of the problem," unquote. Is the lack of detox centers due simply to a budget crunch or a lack of political will, or simply pushback from people who say, "Sorry, not my problem"?
I think we lack access to detox centers and treatment centers because that would require a lot of money and a lot of effort, and someone would actually have to do their job, whereas pumping billions of dollars into nonprofits where you don't really have to perform and you just keep getting money not based on your success rate is just much easier because you can easily launder money and basically steal.
So let's talk about some of the attempted solutions you witnessed in the housing crisis. You write they handed out permanent housing to crackheads with deadly results. What typically led to the deaths?
Well, as I'm seeing in the city that I reside next to, San Francisco, they have provided no strings attached housing to homeless people. And a lot of homeless people are addicted to fentanyl, and fentanyl is very deadly. It's actually extremely deadly if someone is alone. So if you provide a studio apartment to someone addicted to fentanyl, they are likely to overdose much more than just being homeless in the streets. I believe 64% of the overdose deaths in San Francisco last year occurred at a fixed address. They were not of homeless people. And the majority of those deaths occurred in the small districts that have the most amount of this no strings attached homeless housing.
And what about decriminalizing petty crime so drug addicts could keep financing their habits? What was the idea here, that a junkie committing a minor offense is more tolerable than spending law enforcement dollars to prosecute the junkie?
I think this measure was enacted to not give people scarlet letters for the rest of their life in the form of a felony conviction. So I understand the sentiment. However, it's really led to a complete decriminalization of basically all property crime where I live. And this gives drug addicts that are committing crimes to support their habit nothing in the way to stop them. And they'll always take the path of least resistance. And sometimes they need a wake-up call. And getting arrested for committing crimes can be that wake-up call in some circumstances. And I think that the solution isn't just to send them to prison and give them felony convictions, but maybe mandate them to treatment if they are arrested for doing such crimes.
We're visiting with Jared Klickstein, author of Crooked Smile, What It Took to Escape a Decade of Homelessness, Addiction, and Crime. Now, your solution is to build enough detox centers for thousands of addicts and then evaluate them. What are some of the underlying needs of the population?
The underlying needs of the population is that they need to first break the physical addiction to drugs. So this would happen in these detox centers. Another problem is that they actually need to be incentivized to go to these treatment centers and these detox centers. So right now they have zero incentivization to ever seek recovery and every incentivization to just keep getting high and committing crimes. So we need to change policy to incentivize them to seek or sometimes be mandated to these detox centers. And then after that, we need long-term treatment that includes job training so that they actually have a life worth living, something to look forward to, a way to be self-sufficient.
But typically, people addicted to drugs don't just have a drug problem. There are typically other problems, such as mental health issues.
Yeah, so there's people that are going to just end up being permanently mentally ill. And these people are just going to need to be taken care of for the rest of their lives. I mean, we just can't let them die in the streets like we do now, because it's not fair to them, but it's also not fair to the citizens that have to sort of endure the wrath of their mental illness. So we need to take care of these people. And a lot of these people that are mentally ill and addicted, oftentimes if you get them off drugs and give them sufficient recovery treatment, they're actually not permanently mentally ill. They're just on a lot of drugs. So yeah, the first step would be detoxifying them from drugs such as methamphetamine and fentanyl, and you may end up with a person that is not mentally ill.
A lot to unpack there, but let's talk first about the free housing approach. Apparently, this led to 1 in 5 participants going back to homelessness voluntarily. Now, was that, do you believe, just a mental health issue, or were there onerous, difficult requirements to stay in the housing?
After SB 1380 passed in California in 2016, there are no requirements to stay in this housing. Usually there's definitely no sobriety requirements. So this was really just a lifestyle decision. When people that are homeless have the choice of living inside or living on the streets, a lot of people are actually attracted to living on the streets, the whole adventure of it, and they're not really used to living inside. So I think some of these people chose to return to homelessness because that's just really who they are, and there was nothing incentivizing them to not do so.
Before, you mentioned mandated drug treatment. Now, having been an addict yourself and talking in the book about how getting high was apparently more important than anything else, would forced treatment work?
Well, it's not going to be perfect, but I think it's pretty insane that I was allowed to just run amok for 10 years and I was never mandated to treatment one time. I just think that if I had been, you know, I had a shot of it working, that's better than a zero chance of it working, because there really are no alternatives. Even if you have the choice to go to detox or treatment, there's really not many. So I think it's worth a shot to attempt to mandate some people to long-term treatment. I mean, I had to actually wait for a jail sentence to ever be mandated to anything where I was not allowed to use drugs.
And you mentioned a second ago here that you envision a way for recovered addicts to get jobs in the drug treatment system. What would that look like? What sort of tasks would they perform?
Well, if they maintain sobriety for a period of time, they're already more qualified than anyone that could go to school for such a thing. So, you know, there would obviously be some schooling involved and some certification involved, but the support system of my vision of state-funded treatment centers is going to need employees, and it's going to need people to help it run. And these recovered drug addicts would be perfect for that. That's just one path. But, you know, I think there's a lot of holes in the labor market, especially with the changing technology that's occurring in Silicon Valley. And I think that we have a big opportunity to fill some of these upcoming holes in the labor market with training people that are recovered from drug addiction to be able to earn a decent wage.
Jared Klickstein, author of Crooked Smile, What It Took to Escape a Decade of Homelessness, Addiction, and Crime. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
This radio commercial was made to convince you to stop speeding. We can't use siren sound effects on the radio, so we'll use other equally jarring sound effects to get your attention. Like telling you that whether you drive a little over the speed limit or a lot, you can crash just the same. You could hurt yourself or worse, others.
I'm at the scene of the collision.
And the damage you cause will be beyond repair. See? We didn't have to use crash or siren sounds after all. Speeding catches up with you. Brought to you by NHTSA.
There are a lot of so-called fast food deals out there. But do any of them have the Wendy's Junior Bacon Cheeseburger, crispy fries, everyone's favorite nugs, and a drink for just $5 like Wendy's Biggie Bag? Nope. And that's why no other deals can be called the Wendy's Biggie Bag. That and a little thing called plagiarism. When the deal is as fresh as the meal, gotta be Wendy's.
Gotta be fresh.
Includes choice of JBC or crispy chicken sandwich with 4-piece nugs, junior fry, and small soft drink. U.S. price and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Alaska, Hawaii, and California via third-party delivery.
Physical fitness helps us stay healthy, yet a majority of Americans don't get enough exercise. There is a way to improve the quality of exercise, and with more, here's InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thanks, Chris. Our guest is Jay Maddock, Regents Professor with the School of Public Health at Texas A&M University and Director of the University's Center for Health and Nature. Professor, everyone knows that working out is a beneficial thing to do, but you were looking at some other variables related to that. Tell us a bit about your study and what you were looking at.
It's really interesting. I think we've got maybe 30 years of history right now showing the benefits of being physically active. And really just in the last few years, especially since COVID, we've been learning more and more about the health benefits of spending time in nature. So out in green spaces or blue spaces and how that improves health. And so what we wanted to do in this study was really look at the combination of the two. Is it healthier to exercise outdoors in natural spaces than it is to do it indoors? And so that's what we did. It was an expert review. So it was not a primary study, but we took all of the research that was out there. We looked at it, we combined it, and really came up with some recommendations.
So tell us the results of your study. Is physical activity outdoors better than indoors?
Yeah, it is. You know, when I talk about this, I like to call it the Reese's peanut butter cup of health promotion. I think you've got your chocolate and your peanut butter, and when you put them together, they're even better. And so that's kind of what we found as we looked at these, is that when you exercise out in natural environment, say, and take a jog in a park, you get all of the benefits that you'd normally get from physical activity in terms of cardiovascular health and reduction in diabetes, etc. But then you get this list of nature benefits. So you get things like improvement of mood, restoration of attention, reduced rumination, increased immune function. And so really for the same amount of time, you get double the benefits.
So it sounds like the extra benefit is primarily on the mental health side. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is right now, the limitation that we saw in the research field is that most of these studies are very short term. So what they'll do is they'll take a group of people, they'll randomize them to either walk around a track or go walk in the woods. And they'll say, okay, at the end of that time, we saw these changes, and typically in mental health. We do know, though, from kind of nature immersion studies, if people spend, say, a long weekend in nature, we might see actual changes in immune function. So something called natural killer cells, which is our body's immune ability to fight cancer, increases from a weekend spent in nature. And so we do think if people habitually exercise in natural environments, you might see some of these other benefits coming, but studies have not been done yet.
In your research, what factors have you identified that affect how often people visit parks and engage in physical activities there?
A lot of it is access. And so in our study, we noted there's a major difference between the states in access to parks and green space, with Illinois being the highest. Almost everybody has quick, easy access to a park, and Mississippi being the lowest, where there's really a lack of public green space. And so that's one of the biggest things is, can I get to that park easy? You don't have to get in the car and drive for a half an hour. You're hoping you've got a community park. So we look at a lot of access. We also look, there's a long history of kind of racial discrimination in this country. And so some minority groups have less access, don't feel as comfortable or safe in the parks. And we just had another paper come out that showed that the time that you spend in nature as a child is a significant predictor of the time you spend in nature as an adult. And so for those of us who didn't get much time in nature as a kid, it is overcoming some barriers as you get older.
Your research explores the concept of something you call Park RX. Tell us what that is and why you think it may be so effective.
The idea behind this is it's a nature prescription that comes from a healthcare provider. And so as we look at doctors and nurses and occupational therapists and other people, telling their patients to get outside, get some time in nature, go take that walk in the park instead of taking it in the gym, can really make a difference. So we've seen when this does happen, it actually works really well. The trick is getting more healthcare providers to be able to do this. Right now, it is not a reimbursable healthcare expenditure for doctors, and so there has been a barrier there. But in studies where they've done it, it actually has worked really well with the patients.
What advice can you offer to someone who perhaps would like to get outdoors, but doesn't think there are any parks or other appropriate places near them?
I would go out and talk to people in your community. Find out where the green spaces are. There are a lot around this country, and everything from people's backyards to a wooded street, and finding these maps. I use All Trails, which is an amazing app to find trails. So anywhere I travel, I put it in and say, where are the good trails near me? And they're everything from beginner through advanced, everything from a mile up to, you know, 30 or 40 miles. And so you can find anything that's right for you, no matter where you are.
Jay Maddock from the School of Public Health at Texas A&M University, thank you very much for joining us today.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That wraps up another edition of InfoTrack. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm your host, Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
The 80s, 90s, and more place in cyberspace. Download the Civic Media app, look for CFW, and stream us anywhere, anytime.
child in the city. Hot child in the city. She's kind of dangerous.
Hot child in the city.
A young child.
Running wild and looking pretty.
Young child. Running wild.
Hot child in the city.
Hot child in the city.
Hot child.
CFW streaming 24/7 on the free Civic Media app.
Baby!
80s, 90s, and more. 105.7.
CFW.
Know that you feel me somehow. You're the closest to heaven that I'll ever be, and I don't wanna go home right now. And all I could taste is this moment, and all I can breathe is your life. And sooner or later it's over. I just don't want. Moment of truth in your lies. When everything feels like the movies, yeah, you bleed just to know you're alive.
Stay informed with the latest news throughout Eau Claire and the entire Chippewa Valley on our sister station, 93.5 The Tap. James Kelly and the WCFW News team has what you need to know every hour, 24 hours a day. For the latest news, talk, and discussion on what's important to you, count on 93.5 The Tap and WCFW.FM.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of Civic Media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute, and today I want to talk about dealing with debt collectors and your rights when you are in collections. Debt collectors are people who've been hired to collect money that you owe to someone else. They can be persistent or rude or sometimes worse, but they do have to follow rules. Federal law says that they cannot call before 8 a.m. in the morning or after 9 p.m. at night. They cannot harass you, meaning they can't curse at you or threaten you. And they cannot lie to you or make up consequences for not paying your debt. And they can't tell anyone other than your spouse or your attorney about your debt. Now, if you experience any of this, you can complain about them to the Federal Trade Commission at consumer.gov. And last thought before I go, you can always ask a debt collector to stop calling you. Legally, they have to comply. If they don't, you report them to the FTC. For more money tips, go to workmoney.org. This is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
The Republican National Convention is being held in Milwaukee, and it marks the first time the RNC is in the Badger State. But Wisconsin holds a special spot in the election cycle, with the RNC the second consecutive political convention in Milwaukee. The city was picked for the Democratic National Convention in 2020, but due to COVID, most of it ended up being virtual. Do you know which city has hosted the most political conventions? Philadelphia, Chicago, or Boston? The answer coming up. Political conventions started in the 19th century. It remained the main way to select candidates until 1972, when presidential primaries determined the eventual nominee. Conventions are now considered more of a celebration of the candidate. So do you know which city has held the most political conventions? Chicago. The Republicans have been there 14 times, and the Democratic convention will be hosted there for the 11th time this summer. 50,000 people expected at the RNC in Milwaukee, a nice slice of Wisconsin for the country to see. I'm Terry
Bar. I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. One or two showers or storms will give way to mostly sunny skies. Highs will top out in the upper 80s this afternoon as our wind turns to the northwest. For the overnight, mostly clear skies. Lows will drop to the middle 60s. One or two storms possible. It's 66 at our studios.
CFW.
We'll be right back.
Mornings with Mike McKay and the best of the 80s, 90s, and more.
CFW.
This is that ice cold Michelle fight for that white gold. This one for them hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces. Stylin', wildin', living it up in the city. Got Chucks on with Saint Laurent, gotta kiss myself, I'm so pretty. I'm too hot. Call the police and the fireman, I'm too hot. Make a dragon wanna retire, man, I'm too hot. Say my name, you know who I am, I'm too hot. And my band bought that money, break it down. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Saturday night and we in the spot. Don't believe me, just watch. Some nigga in it.
Take a sip, sign the check.
Julio, get the stretch.
Right to Harlem, Hollywood, Jackson, Mississippi. If we show up, we gon' show out. Smoother than a fresh drop.
Skip it. I'm too hot. Call the police and the firemen. I'm too hot. Make a dragon wanna retire, man. I'm too hot. Say my name. Hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you.
Saturday night and we in the spot.
Don't believe me, just watch. Uptown funk you up, Uptown funk you up, Uptown funk you up, Uptown funk you up. Come on, dance, jump on it. If you suck, said and flown it. If you freak dead and own it, don't brag about it, come show me. Come on, dance, jump on it. If you suck, said and flown it.
Well, it's Saturday night and we in the spot.
Don't believe it, just watch. Just why? Don't believe.
Stab it with their steely knives, but they just can't.